welcome to this episode of the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. This is episode 227, which is a GDPR radio session, and I'm joined here today by our host, as always, Katarina Santos. How are we doing, Kate?
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How did you find the session? It was an interesting one, wasn't it?
No, I really enjoy this session. It's always good when we have actually people participating, joining us. It makes it like more interactive. But you have very interesting news that came up this week, particularly around the European Union Commission. We talk a little bit about the potential new definition of personal data and as well the new deadlines for data breaches, which always is always very interesting to talk about. What do you think?
It was a very intriguing discussion. And I suppose it so closely links to discussions that we've had around adequacy recently and then the potential of the UK not getting their adequacy decision renewed, which I think will happen in the end. And it seems like the EU is almost kind of adopting a similar approach to we have in reform to the data protection laws that we've got. And as much as I think we agree and disagree with some of the changes we've seen from what we talked about today, I think we both have differing opinions about some elements, which is always makes for a good podcast. I think it's always great to get, as you say, get people involved from the chat. Mm-hmm. So obviously a big thank you to David who jumped on as well. And then also the talks about the SARS stuff as well, with the new purpose test or the proposed purpose test for SARS. Mm-hmm. About, I think the phrase is abusive requests or requests where the heart of protection of personal data isn't of concern to the request, which is could be monumental for organizations if that is something that comes through to the EU, trickles over to the UK. That would be absolutely huge, and I don't think there's any understating that. But I don't want to give it too much away just because we've already spoke a lot about what we're going to be speaking about today. But if you are listening to this today on Spotify and you would like to join us live to reap the full benefits of the session, please email the info@dataprotectionpeople.com email address, because the live session I think is where all the fun is. But without further ado, we'll let you jump right into the session. Enjoy. Thank you. Reach out to us. Sweet. I think that is everything. So, Kate, how was your week then?
I to be honest, every single time you ask me that question, I don't remember how was my week. I remember that it was a very long week, and I was already on Tuesday saying that I wish it was a weekend, because it was those type of weeks. We are doing an absolutely massive project that initially was just Jasmine included, but at the end of this week, yourself, Imanshi, that is our new junior consultant, and myself alongside with Jasmine are working all together. So obviously that requires a lot of our time and attention. But other than that, actually, just preparing myself for holiday, that is always an anxiety. I think that, I don't know why, but I just shared internally that I was going to on annual leave, and obviously with customers that I spoke with our catch-ups. But I feel that probably they have like this group and they told each other that I'm going on annual leave, because they all remember
Everybody
me.
Knows.
Just now, just coming back to me and with all these questions and everything all to do. And but it is what
always
it is.
What
joys. About you?
I've had a quite a cool week, I think. Well, cool depending on how you look at it. I've been doing
statement.
for data protection anyway. But I've been working a lot with the stairs this week, as always and as ever. This seems to be plaguing my life at the moment.
And now he's
for anybody for anybody that is interested in the stairs, especially if you are a social housing provider, we do have an in-person event hopefully coming up soon that we're going to be able to talk about a little bit more once we get a little bit more details, but hopefully that should be out and about for you guys shortly. So again, if similar to the SAR event that we had not too long ago, we're going to be hosting a very similar one to STAIRS. Probably won't be in the same location as last time, our offices, hopefully somewhere a little bit bigger, just because of interest, but we will see how it goes. So if anyone is interested in that, just please keep your ear to the ground. You probably will hear something about that very shortly. But we did do something cool today, not today, this week, that we didn't mention, Kate, and that was we actually had a guest appearance on a podcast for both of us, didn't we? So we managed to do a podcast with a really, really cool company about data protection and how we communicate with customers. How did you think that went?
It was actually very cool because normally as a consultant, we are used to kind of advise the organizations, obviously in the kind of, in the bearing in mind the rights and freedoms of individuals and transparency and communication, etc. But on this side of the story, it was very nice, like, to understand and put ourselves in the feet of the users and how can we, the users and customer experience, how can we as users receive the information and how the privacy notices and transparency is so important. We talked a little bit about as well how is important the training within all the departments and stakeholders and making sure that everyone is out at the same, in the same line actually, and all, everyone is aligned regardless if they just a data protection officer or the privacy leader, but as well as a marketing team or HR, etc. So it was very nice. What do you think?
Yeah, no, really cool company. It was great. It's always great to get on and do podcasts, and for other people's podcasts, it's nice to see where
we're going
wrong usually, we find. But no, the host is amazing, very welcoming. Hopefully that session will be available in the coming weeks. Once it is, we will let you guys all know. If it's something that interests you, you should absolutely go check out the podcast that they do, if the one that we do send out does interest you. But I know that we're waffling slightly. Should we get on to the news? Kate, have we seen anything in the news this week that is of interest?
Yes, I'm actually very happy to give me the floor now, because I've seen in the news that 2 days ago, so on the 19th of November, the European Commission presented the digital package, or the digital omnibus, aimed at simplifying and streamlining several of the EU's major digital laws. This will include the GDPR, the e-privacy directive, the Artificial Intelligence Act, and any other legislations that are kind of tech and data protection related. The stated aim is to kind of clarify ambiguities, cut administrative burden for businesses, especially for small businesses, and make all these legislation and regulatory landscape more kind of innovation-friendly, obviously kind of preserving the Europe's high standards of rights and protections. And I'm mentioning this because there are two or three proposals that I would like to explore with you and as well with the audience, because I think they are very, very interesting. The first one is the drafting of the concept of personal data. So now, as we know, and kind of in brief terms, the personal data, the concept of kind of includes all the type of information that can directly or indirectly identify an individual. In this proposal, actually, kind of the burden goes to the controller and says that the information will be considered personal data only if the controller has means reasonably likely to identify the individual. So this means that kind of all the indirect identifiers or indirect identifiability will not belong to the scope of the personal data or the concept of personal data if the controller will not be able to kind of reasonable or likely to identify the individual. It's quite just to raise a point here, because this was already discussed back in the days within the UK Gov. It was not included in the DUARC, that is very point, but was included in previous reforms bill that we present to the government. But I think this one is quite interesting.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
It could very dramatically maybe change the way we look at personal data. It's very interesting that they put that onus on the controller.
Yeah.
It's putting a lot of faith in controllers, because I think it could lead maybe to people claiming lots more information is outside of scope than maybe we would argue. I think the biggest question mark it kind of came up for me was in relation to pseudonymized data.
Yes.
Because obviously, as we know, separately to anonymized data, it is within the scope of what we consider personal data typically. Now, does that then change the definition of that also? Because that is things that have been combined to create something that's personal data, but it's kind of separate from that original data that we've had. So now, what I think the difficulty is, what is a reasonable effort? And I kind of hate that word, but I don't know how else they would
It's
do it.
everywhere.
It is everywhere.
It's
I
everywhere.
don't know how else you define it. I don't. Maybe I'm not smart enough to be able to say that, but I do hate the ambiguity of, or whatever's reasonable. It leads a lot to play with. But I think in my mind that could change the scope of what we think pseudonymized data is in terms of the scope. David, I can see you've got
David.
your hand up. You want to jump in?
Yeah, I think this is just building on some recent case law in Europe, actually, where I think it's Germany, didn't research this, I'm speaking off the top of my head, but found almost exactly that. Although this would take it a step further, they basically suggested that a third party could treat data as anonymized, even if it was pseudonymized, if they didn't have the way to relink the data sets. So it seems to be a build on the case law, but then the finding, I believe, said you still got to follow all the rest, the GDPR Act, whereas this might slightly move away from that if it removed you from all the other data sharing obligations and other things. And clearly at the moment this is just a discussion, but I think it's probably picking up on that case law, because I think once it's case law, it's pretty much got to accept it. So I believe it's probably building on that and the piece around pseudonymized data with third parties. And from that point of view, I think it's a pretty reasonable build, as long as you have to, continue to meet the rest of the obligations of the legislation.
You're absolutely right, David. I actually, when I was doing my research, I've came across two or three articles, and all of them kind of identify the case law of European decision. So I will share with the links with the in within the post about the decision. And I think within the pseudonymization, I think in my opinion will be if the controller is kind of a no key to kind of re-identify the data, because, for example, the third party will hold that key, so the data may not account as personal data. So I think will be kind of the burden on the controller, kind of say, well, I actually have the way or the key to actually re-identify. All right, fair enough, personal data within the scope, fair. But if it's feasible for the controller to say, no, I have no key, I have no means to kind of make this data identifiable, because actually is the third party that holds that power. So I would say potentially would be considered a reasonable means. So potentially, again, outside of the scope of the definition. But yeah, I think it's a very interesting question, because potentially, and I'm sure Ken will be back me up on this, Phil is always saying that personal data is the most difficult definition that the UK GDPR holds. Is not straightforward, can include so many, many things, and includes so many other things. So I think this one we will actually discuss on this.
No, absolutely. It's definitely an interesting discussion piece. I need to probably have a little peek a little bit more at the case. Like, I dropped this on me on like 10 this morning. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. But hold your thoughts, because I want to wait till 12:30. But no, that is very interesting. Makes sense that it comes from case
Yeah,
law.
I think as well this will be an absolutely massive impact on if actually go through, and if the UK again, for example, decides to follow the same steps, because again, this is the year, right? But can you imagine the impact that would be, for example, on SaaS, or even, for example, on the special category data that is again one of their proposals, that is, for example, they gave I've seen the article, they give the example of special category data and then health concerning data concerning health, sorry. And again, this will be only special category data will only count if it reveals directly special information around all the categories involved. So again, directly identifiers. I think it could be very interesting. I appreciate the fact that it's definitely to kind of relieve a little burden on the
Sure.
organizations. And as well on the our interpretation, but I don't know. I actually enjoy the concept of the personal data now. It's kind of interesting for us to kind of debate about it, isn't
Yeah,
it?
I mean, I don't mind the definition as is. I think there's a lot of like weird areas though
Yeah.
that are like, and I'm probably for more sectors that are probably different than the one the ones we deal in the main, it can probably get really awkward, I imagine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's very interesting. I'm gonna watch it very closely.
Yeah.
I think there's a few other changes that's formed part of it as well, isn't there?
Yeah. I would just like
Okay.
to highlight at least one more or two. Personal data breaches was one of them. So, on this case, the proposed states that reporting will be only required for high risk breaches. So no just risky, aligning with the regulator and individual notification thresholds, and as well the deadline may extend from 72 to 96 hours. I think again, very interesting extension of the hours and the time frames and the deadlines to actually report this breach to the supervisor authorities. Again, probably will give a more scope, more room for the controllers to carry out a good investigation, a proper investigation that has more content, they have more time, and as well as, for example, when we have weekends, if happens,
Sure.
for example. So actually kind of oversees a little bit on that. But as well, the fact that it's just high-risk ones that will be, well, if again,
Yeah,
goes reportable.
that's intriguing to me because I think risk in itself, just because a risk isn't high, as long as a risk is present, if you're consistently having like just maybe just below the threshold for reporting or the threshold for reporting consistently, just because they're not always high-risk breaches does not mean that there isn't very large issues probably fundamentally that ongoing in the business that aren't being covered. You know, if we and I think if it was something that was adopted in the UK at least, it's probably just an excuse for the ICO to deal with them less because they're clearly a little bit slow at the moment with responding to those still, and I think we're still seeing that right now. But I don't know if moving it to high risk is the right decision. I think maybe sometimes there's organizations that may over-report, which may be part of the problem that they're trying to identify. But I don't think that's a bad thing. And I don't know about the time frame either, because I mean, I appreciate giving that extra bit of leeway for a thorough investigation, but there is always that option of reporting, letting them know that you are investigating and then updating the regulatory body consistently, which I appreciate is not always ideal. And maybe sometimes it feels like you're only giving them half a story and that can sort of change the precedent and maybe internal pressures and everything like that as well. I don't know what the impact is. I don't know if adding an additional 24 hours is going to change anything like dramatically in terms of like the broad scheme of things. So I don't think it's like a bad change per se. I just don't know how impactful it would be to organizations who are doing these investigations. If that extra 24 hours is like crucial to get the last little pieces ticked together and we can demonstrate that, then sure, I think it's a good thing. But in terms of changing the reportability thresholds, I don't know if that sits
It will be
quite
something.
right with me. But yeah, I think it depends what your perspective is on reporting on breaches, I suppose.
Yeah, and as well the culture, isn't it? Because I'm not sure about you actually, but in terms of clientele that I have actually very a large number of clients that, regardless of the data breach, they decide just for cautious to always report it to the ICO,
Is that for every breach?
regardless.
Yeah,
Regardless.
I don't know if I'm the biggest fan of that
So,
approach.
yeah, just
Just because.
because the interpretation on this end is it poses a risk, even if
Sure.
it's low. So we
It's
are reporting.
all about likelihood though, isn't it? And I think that's a really key takeaway for anybody dealing with breaches is and I see this often, and I actually see it in the process of training new starts in the business actually. I mean, within my supporters team, the people that I usually take on prior to them becoming full-fledged members of the team, they spend a lot of time with me understanding data protection law and everything surrounding it. And when they're practicing things like breaches, one thing I've noticed is they're all very quick to jump to worst possible case scenario and go, we need to report it. We need to report it because there's a chance of fraud or there's a chance of them like physical like harm. And I'm like, okay, I understand what you're saying. These are all risks and we should take them into account. But what is the actual likelihood of these occurring? And I don't think it's a bad line of thinking to always be thinking worst case, but we've always got to strip it back to, in actuality, what is likely to happen from this, not what could happen in just in circumstance, but from what we know, from the context we have, what is going to happen. And when that's a little bit grey, I mean, I think you're well within your rights to report and take that sort of reasonable approach. If you're like, I actually don't have enough context to ascertain how likely this is to happen. You know, this feels a little bit separate from me. The context we've got isn't great. We don't really know these individuals very well. Stuff like that. If that's the case, then sure. But every personal data breach, especially from what I see from my working in like stuff like the educational sector, if the education sector reported every single breach they ever had, it's no wonder the ICO takes as long as they do to respond, because it would be it would be crazy.
Yeah. I think is one of the things that kind of made me think actually with you in terms of the data breaches were the fact that they're imposing this to a high risk. I do appreciate that. It's actually interesting because it's aligned with the notification to the data subjects on Article 34 of the high risk if imposed to be notified, and as well with the data protection impact assessment. So I think it kind of aligns with the concepts of the high risk. If high risk is involved, then certain thing will happen. And with the data breach will kind of align if this go through. But as well, I think I'm actually asking myself about what will be the impact on the data subjects on this, if any. Sure. Because again, obviously more time will require eventually better reports, more information, but the ICO will have more time in the ideal world, we have more time and more resources to actually expedite the response. So probably it will be a good impact actually, even if it requires more time. But yeah, I'm actually very happy with this proposal. And one last one that I would like to raise is actually again is around the cookies. So and this kind of came across just because obviously there is the question if there will be extension or not within the UK EU in terms of the breach that we have on international transfers matter. And the main question was because the UK approved the DUE Act, and because it was too simple and it was simplified the burdens for the organizations, etc. Now, actually, they are kind of following the same path. And this is very clear with the cookies and the similar technologies, because what they want to do in this regard with the privacy directive actually is simplifying the rules on the cookies. So kind of reducing the need for the cookie banners and the relying on consent. And the main argument is the constant requesting consent. So kind of consent fatigue is already here. And the main thing is certain low risk purposes, again, security, aggregated audience measurement, etc., may not require consent anymore. So kind of aligned with our DUE Act. So just making a point, I think is very worth it to keep an eye on this, definitely to even just to research purposes. But yeah.
I think that's one of the changes in the DUE I actually liked the most. Yes. That was the most important.
And very made sense.
maybe it is because of that consent fatigue, but always how it's been from my perspective, and it's probably the one that when I saw that I probably sighed like a bit of relief a little bit. I was like, oh, that's quite nice actually. But David, again, you wanna jump in as well? How you feel?
Yeah, can I just mention two more that come out of the piece, especially because one I'm not 100%. Sure if you were on last week, but we ended up talking about in detail last week. So there was a leak and IAPA published what they thought that it said, and a few people on the call asked if I put the link in. I did. It's good to see. I think both those things have been carried through, or one's been carried through to the actual release, which was essentially a purpose test around data subject access requests, which I think could be huge. So basically, at least my reading of what that says is it would allow you, if the purpose is not to clarify the personal data, i.e., and it makes, I think it even references employment cases, you wouldn't need to respond to the data subject access request, or you would be in a position to charge for it, which I think would be a substantive change for quite a lot of people on this call. Admittedly, we're talking European law and we'd need that to filter across into the DUE, but I think that's, I mean, definitely huge for me outside of the UK if that follows through.
For sure.
And then I think there's one other interesting one that slightly just crosses over more into AI legislation, in fact, definitely does. And there's a piece that they're still struggling to provide the guidance on what is high risk AI processing, so okay. which is specific, and they're pushing the date out until at the latest December 2027. So they what okay. they've essentially said is they've still not provided enough guidance for people to identify themselves whether they're high risk processing or not, therefore they're moving back the requirement, which I believe was for June 26, and it will now occur at least before DEC 2027, but that's quite significant for anybody in those areas. So I think they were the big high points when I looked at that.
The sound is really interesting, actually, David, and obviously it touches on what we spoke about last week as well, in terms of the sort of heart of a request. But I think for a lot of organizations, that would substantially change the amount of SARs that are being rejected or fees charged. I mean, you don't really see, or from my experience, you don't really see fees charged very often. But I think from what I understood from it as well, is we're looking at the heart of protecting the data. And if we don't think that they're making that request because they want to know that their data is protected, then we can push back on it. But I wonder what I suppose it's maybe in the wording and context of the request and how we figure that out. I don't know how easy that would be to do. Obviously it's still very early days, but I'm not wholly against that really at all. I'm actually quite bored with that. I think there's, again, a lot of SARs for SARs' sake sometimes, whether it's to fuel something, and we see it with different payer claims a lot, and then we know that people start pushing back on them really heavily, and then, you know, for some people it's still an issue, for some people not so much, and maybe this is a similar vein where now that people are seeing such an uptick in these SARs again for the sake of SARs, maybe it's the case that they're giving people the tools to only really open the SAR up to people that really want what the SAR is used for, and I think that's a positive thing at the end of the day.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So what about you, Kane? Sorry, just a bit.
In terms of news.
Sorry. Yeah, you have seen something about CNIL, didn't you? The French Supervisor Authority.
I did see something about the CNIL. I thought it was a nice quick one, so it's a good opportunity to bring it up. But the CNIL did a study recently about personal data in relation to advertising. And then a study that they did, you'll have to excuse me for reading on the other page. They examined that French citizens have a willingness to sell their personal data in exchange for monetary compensation in response to online advertising. And the survey showed that out of around 2,000 individuals, 65% of respondents were willing to sell their data. And they were prepared to do so for about a bracket of 1 to 100 euros, which for me is, you know, a little bit crazy. But I think it comes down to, I think it's two kinds of people. It's one, people that understand that their data is out there, and I think they're just not bothered anymore. It's people that don't fully understand the value and the weight that their personal data actually holds to these businesses for marketing, and don't truly understand the purposes. But I thought the study was fascinating, because that's a massive chunk of people, like more than I would have thought, to be honest with you.
I agree. I think it's just people underestimate the value of their data. I think I think it was very clear, actually, with COVID, that how valuable is our data. And nowadays, every single time that, for example, we use these free tools, people just think, oh, it's free. And normally we actually just speak with a lot of people, very academic people, actually, in fact. And they think actually the free tools are free tools. They are not free tools. Yeah. Definitely, I promise, there is always something in stake. And if it's free, it's because you yourself as an individual are the product. Yeah. So it is your data that is within, it may be with cookies, your preferences, the way you react to the link, to the website. Even, for example, Google as actually a website per se, he's collecting your data.
The cookies thing was so common, wasn't it? Especially more, maybe not as much these days, but even on my perspective, it's just kind of I think it's the fatigue of seeing it so many times.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I just need to go. I need to find something now, I need to get this ticket for XYZ before something. I need to do this before something. You're in Russia, blah, 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 blah. But the implications of that are broad, I think.
And just, I'm thinking about it as well, like the amount of money could be like something, wow, that actually made you think.
I would have picked a bigger.
Yeah. I think, if it is to be bad, at least I'll do it in style.
I want to go on holiday at least. Like, yeah. Apparently, there's like 6% of people who are willing to take about €1 for their personal data, which really summarizes some of the general public's view on their own personal data. But I think it is some people who are just like, oh, well, it's probably already out there. But I think there's 35% of people who said they wouldn't sell it under any circumstances.
Regardless.
Great, good for them.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's amazing. Yeah. I think, to be honest, I think people actually, the 65%, they just don't understand, even with the 110, 30 quid, whatever, just don't understand that actually their data will be used for profiling, advertising, even now with AI training. So they will actually, it's worth in the market for thousands of euros or it's amazing, and they don't just generally understand the value of their data, which is, well, that's why we are here, to make them understand.
I suppose maybe our goal is to reach the stars above and become broader public than just data protection, but I think that's wishful thinking, to say the least. But I'm very mindful of the time, so unless there's anything else that you want to raise, I think we'll probably wrap stuff up for today. Obviously, thank you all very much for joining
thank
us, as always. And thank you very much, David, for jumping in with some very interesting insight, as always. So thank you very much
for that. Thank you. The next episode will be on data retention, so please join us.
Yes, and maybe in our new little DPP sort of podcast studios. Yeah. Well,
I'll be in Morocco.
Right.
Thank you guys. Well, have a great weekend.
See you later.
Thank you, Kane. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.